do things.
Thanks. You can keep going if you want. Okay.
He told me he might prefer an exam about this.
Yes, yes. Well, first of all, let me say thank you for letting me share this with you. This whole process has been truly enjoyable, and it's an honor and a privilege to share with you. The title of my project was Zeugnis in the Local Congregation Through the Book of Ruth, which is a little more technical than I'm normally comfortable with, but that is how the process was formed. Have any of you ever seen or seen the movie or read the book Horton Hears a Who? Okay, some of you. Okay, in that story, there's an elephant by the name of Horton who finds on a speck of dust on a flower finds an entire civilization. And I don't want to, it's spoiler alert here, so if you've never read it or seen it and you want to this week, you can close your ears for a second. But towards the end, the civilization cries out, "We are here, we are here, we are here," in order to get the attention of all the other creatures before they're destroyed. That is kind of symbolic of the culture that we live in. If we think of our culture here in North America, it's definitely a culture that everyone is at least in some ways trying to have their voice heard. So if you think of something like social media, we've got Facebook and Twitter. So if you have a random thought, you can put it down for anyone who has internet access to hear that voice or to see that picture of your baby or whatever it is you're posting at that time. Even politicians see the value in Facebook, so they have entire teams who are on social media trying to get you to vote for a certain candidate. But it's not just with social media. It's also with things like television. My wife and I have taken to watch the last season, the only time we've watched American Idol together. And, you know, you can vote. You can have a say in what happens in those types of shows and those types of situations throughout television. And it happens in other places in our society as well, that we tend to be a people who want to cry out, "We are here, we are here, we are here," except for in the church, at least in my experience. Now, there are churches who are different, but in my own experience with the church, it's been more like I'm watching television than I'm participating in something. Think about how we approach church on Sunday mornings. We go in and we sit down and we wait for the show to begin on what we call the stage. It's a performance, and the show begins. Sometimes in most places it begins with our favorite theme songs, right? Okay, and we might sing along with those, and we sit there, and we might communicate with the people beside us, we might not, but then as the show progresses, the performance goes on the stage, and we watch it sometimes with mild interest, sometimes we're really involved in it. But once it's over, the theme music plays, we get up and we wonder what we're going to eat for a snack or what we're going to eat for lunch or whatever it is. It's very similar to the way that we watch TV. There's not much interaction. There's not much of a voice permitted. That's not the way early Anabaptists started out. And the fancy word that is there, Zeugnis, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. If I'm not, I'm sorry. Someone who knows German can pronounce it better. But it literally means witness. And in the early Anabaptist churches, this was something that happened, that when someone would share a sermon on a Sunday morning, the congregation would gather together as the person shared. And when they finished, people in the congregation would ask questions, they would challenge, they would push back, they would talk about how it connected with their lives. It was a conversation between the entire community, where everyone was a kingdom of priests, where everyone was involved in what was happening. So my project was based upon that. What does that look like in a small country church what does that look like in a Christian community? And this came out of, and I need to thank a number of you this morning, but this came out of studies at the Preaching Institute with Steve, where we looked at what it means to be a multi-voiced community of faith. And so I took that and kind of wrestled with that, and then Brenton was giving us Anabaptist history, which added to it, and then took an independent study with Nate on the history of preaching and got to listen to and see how other churches did Zeugness in the modern world today and what it kind of looked like. And then, of course, I'm thankful for Mark and Brian for their incredible help to be able to process and to work through this and the ideas that they gave us. But what does it look like for Zeugness? What does it look like to have that kind of conversation within a local community? So let me tell you a little bit about my church. Mark started sharing a little bit. The church building itself sits in the mountains of, I guess, west of here, 2 hours west of here. It's not really western Pennsylvania, eastern western Pennsylvania. How's that? That's a good description. But it's the church building is sat in the mountains. So when you picture a small country church surrounded by trees, that's Mount Tabor. It's been in existence for over 100 years, but it's been a Brethren in Christ church since the 1950s. Again, it's a very rural area. The average attendance on Sunday mornings is about 60 people. The church, the congregation itself is mainly blue-collar workers and retirees. A congregation, a community that is very loving and very caring, and it's a humbling and blessing. I can't talk this morning. I'm sorry. Blessing to be with them as their pastor, and I've been there for 9 years. This congregation also is in many ways very reserved, and so. It was a struggle with this project to come up with a way for us to have a conversation in a setting that would work. Some churches prefer settings where it's right after the sermon, you have a question and answer time. That probably wouldn't work well at Mount Tabor. So what we decided to do is that we have, at Mount Tabor, we have Sunday school. Following worship. So we gathered volunteers to join us after worship to meet. The series itself, the project itself, included 5 sermons beginning the last Sunday of January, which was an introduction to why we're doing this and why it's important to do this. It's really important for us as followers of Jesus to not just know things, but to be able to live those things out, live those ideas out in our own lives, and to wrestle with what it means to be a Christian today. And so that's really what the first sermon was about, and us moving from a people who know things to a people who live them out. The following 4 weeks, the 4 weeks of February, we looked at the book of Ruth together. Which is was a little bit out of my comfort zone and everyone else's as well. But Ruth is a book that we chose because it's a story of common people living out their faith. With the exception of maybe Boaz in the story of Ruth, everyone else is just normal compared to, I guess, everyone else in Scripture. But they're just normal people who have no idea what they're doing except they're just trying to be faithful in the moment that they have. And so we wanted to look at that with our own community of faith. We were just common people who can make some connections to the story of a widow or the story of someone who's childless or whatever it is, to what it means to really be faithful in the world. And it also touched on at a very tense time, which it's still tense, the idea of migrants and immigrants. Which was never, I'll say this up front, never my intention, not why I chose Ruth at all, but it worked out well, and I'm not going to complain about that. But it was just this opportunity for us to look at the book together. So this is what we did. We added voices to our worship service. Normally at Mount Tabor, it is mainly pastor-driven, and so I would be responsible for everything but the singing, which the congregation is thankful for, that I'm not singing. But we had volunteers to do some of the dramatic readings from the scriptures that we were looking at. And then we had that group of seven volunteers that met after the worship service during the Sunday school time. And we gathered together around a table to just discuss the chapter that we looked at. Now, this group didn't just hear the sermon. They also volunteered to read through the chapter before the worship service, okay? So I gave them a handout each week, and for February 7th, the chapter was Ruth chapter 1. So the Monday before the 7th, they I guess it'd be February 1st, they read all of Ruth chapter 1. And then it was divided up into smaller sections until Saturday when they would read the entire chapter again. So ideally, throughout the week, they read the chapter three times before we gathered for worship. And there were questions attached to these readings as well that allowed them an opportunity to think about what they were reading and to help us as we gathered. We also had, and we'll talk about this a little more, instead of just talking about, again, we wanted to be able to participate, to live this out. So we collected items for MCC for refugee relief kits, and we also had some visitors, guests from MCC, share with us about how MCC is participating and helping with refugees. And finally, we invited people to join us to visit our residents in nursing homes. So we gathered as a group after church one Sunday and went to visit them. And that was, I'll talk more about that a little later, but a wonderful experience. So the first week was February 7th, was Ruth chapter 1, the first week that we actually were involved in Ruth and met together as a group. If you're not familiar with the story of Ruth, Ruth chapter 1 is not a very encouraging start to a book. There's a lot of death, there's a famine, there's a lot of lamenting and pain. And the sermon focused on dealing with that pain in the midst of this world. I mean, we live in a world that is filled with pain and brokenness. So towards the end of chapter 1, Naomi will say, "My name is not Naomi anymore, it's Mara," which means bitterness or bitter. And so how we deal with that in this world of pain is kind of what the focus of the sermon was on. It was also focused on that famous passage where Ruth says, "My God will be your God, my people your people." Just how much Naomi did not want Ruth to go with her. And in fact, in chapter 1, it says that she stops talking to her after she says that. There's no way to stop her from coming. I don't want you to come, so I'm just going to kind of ignore you, in a sense. These two are held in balance, that Ruth saw some hope or something in Naomi that drew her, or Naomi's family, we're not really told, that drew her to want to be a follower of the God of Israel and want to go with Naomi back home. And so that's where the first week focused. So when the group got together, we sat down, and each week I would say to them, what did you learn? What did you like? What didn't you like? What stood out to you? What questions do you have? And then I let them talk. Each week I would have a list of questions prepared. We didn't get to them any of the weeks, which I'm very thankful for. But they talked and discussed a lot about suffering, as rightly so, and how we deal with suffering in this world, how we live in a world of suffering, and how we live as a people of hope in that world. And discussed more about the conversion of Ruth and took guesses at why she was responding the way she was to Naomi, and came up with some pretty good imaginative stories that we had that was interesting. We also talked about the value of women in the ancient Near East and in this culture and time. That came up almost every week as we really struggled with that. and how we respond to the Mara in our lives, whether that be the own bitterness in our own lives or those around us who are going through difficult times. How do we respond to them? So we sat around and we discussed those things together as a group. Again, there were seven of us who had met together and read these passages together before. The following week on Valentine's Day, we talked about Ruth chapter 2, which is where Ruth and Boaz meet for the first time, and they run across that field and they embrace in the middle. That's not how it happens, but on Valentine's Day, we began to focus a little more on not so much suffering, but how we deal with suffering. So in Ruth chapter 2, Ruth gathers at the field of Boaz and does a lot of things to kind of push how the people had interpreted God's law, to push that a little further. Ruth is teaching God's people. Ruth, this Moabite woman, is teaching God's people what it means to follow God, which is really powerful. We had some volunteers come up and practice ancient farming practices for everyone so that we could get a more visual understanding of what's happening. Sometimes it's hard with that. And again, we focused on how Ruth and Boaz, this isn't a story, a love story. On Valentine's Day, we talked about how this wasn't a love story, not a romantic love, but we used the word hesed, the Hebrew word that can be translated loving kindness or grace or a number of other different ways that God uses to describe God's self in Exodus. That's what Ruth and Boaz and Naomi and this whole book are trying to figure out what this looks like. And so we talked about that, we talked about how to stretch what it means to love those around us. So for example, Peter Rollins tells the story of a group of people who hear Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, but the only thing they remember is when Jesus says, if someone tells you to carry their pack 1 mile, carry it two. And so they go back to their own community, and they take that, and they begin to live that out. They begin to carry everyone's pack 2 miles, and they go up to people and grab their stuff, carry it for 2 miles. And then in the story Peter Rollins tells, Jesus appears in the community and says, you missed the point. For when I said 2 miles, I actually meant three. And the power of that is what Ruth chapter 2 is about, is that we are constantly being pushed. So in the ancient world, when you left the edges of your field for the poor to glean, well, how big's an edge? Is it one row? Can I leave like 4 plants here, or do I leave 5? How big is an edge? And what Ruth does is says it's not about the edge, it's about the field. And she pushes Boaz to see that, and it begins to have a domino effect for everyone else that they come in contact with. So the discussion of the group was centered around the idea of coincidences or noticing God working in our lives. Ruth just happened to end up at the field of someone that Naomi was related to and someone that Naomi knew. And so we spent a long time talking about that and time talking also about Hesed, sharing stories looking at what it means. And one of the most important comments I heard of the entire project came out of this group where someone said at the very end of the discussion, and it might have been my wife Kimberly who said it, but she's saying no, but she doesn't even know what I'm going to say. At the very end of the discussion, as we were leaving, someone said, sometimes we have to have courage to accept this kind of grace and this kind of love. And that was a very powerful comment, that it does take courage to be a people who accept grace as well as show it, or hesed as well as show it to others. All right, chapter 3, the scandalous night. This is the story where Ruth goes into Boaz's tent or while he's sleeping, and and does some things that aren't really clear but are clear and we're not going to talk about with this project. But she basically proposes to him. She goes, Naomi sent Ruth to do one thing, and Ruth goes another step further again and pushes Boaz into doing some other things. And so we related this scandalous night and this scandalous moment to the it was Lent, so to the scandal of Gethsemane, of a garden and a God who goes to great lengths beyond what we ever expected to love us. On that same Sunday as well, we had guests from MCC, as I mentioned, share about the refugee crisis and the plight of refugees. And they did a fantastic job, and it was good to have them there. And this was Mark's suggestion, so thank you, Mark. Our community doesn't really experience refugees that much at all. Except for what's seen on TV. So to have, I didn't feel like I could say anything because I'm not an expert, but others who have opportunity and who have experience came and shared with us. Them being there though, that being said, created probably the biggest problem and the biggest failure of the entire project because I, without thinking, invited them to come join our conversation group. And they came, hoping that they would add to the discussion, but what happened was that I had just invited two experts to come and tell us what to do, the exact opposite of what I wanted with this project. And it had a big effect. The dynamics of the group changed. The discussion was definitely much less that day, and if there was one thing I would change about that project, I would go back and change that. Not because the two were horrible people. They weren't that at all, but just because of the way it had changed everything and had done the exact, undone everything we were trying to do in the midst of that. But they did share with us, and we did spend some time talking about refugees and how to care, and also the dynamics of men and women in the midst of showing Hesed, so that men show Hesed. Men in our society, it's much more, in some ways, much more likely that I'm going to stop and help a hitchhiker, pick up a hitchhiker, than my wife, just because of the way society trains us and those types of things. Okay, moving right along. Ruth chapter 4 was on February 28th, the last chapter we looked at. And what tends to happen, at least for me in my experience with this project and going through Ruth and sharing Ruth with one another, was that it gets really overwhelming to see all the need around us. So much so that you say, where do I even start? Where do I even begin? Or should I even start? Because I can't help everybody. I can't do everything. But Ruth chapter 4 was a reminder, again, this is Boaz. Ruth doesn't speak in chapter 4. Boaz does a lot of the speaking, so does Naomi. But Boaz goes and takes care of everything, every legal matter that he needs to take care of so that he can marry Ruth and that they can, or he can take care of Ruth and Naomi. Boaz is taking a huge risk to marry Ruth in the midst of this. He could lose a lot. But he's doing it out of Hesed because of what he's seen from Ruth and because what he knows of Naomi and has seen of her, too. These are just common people doing common things. I mean, when you go, if you happen to get selected for jury duty and you have to go and sit there all day, you don't really think of that as some an act of spirituality or an act of being faithful to God in many ways, or you have to fill out your car registration or whatever it is. That's what Boaz is doing here. And so he's just simply trying to be faithful with whatever's in front of him. He's just going through the daily patterns of life. And these are common people living out a common life. Ruth, Boaz, Naomi, they had no clue that David was in the future. And they had no clue that any of this was in the future. They were just being faithful where they were. And because of that, Ruth is transformed, Naomi is transformed, Boaz is transformed, all of Israel is transformed through Obed and then Jesse and then David. And we are transformed through Christ, through that. And so that was the focus of the sermon on that day. The group, we reflected more on the final week about what we had learned so far, any lingering questions we had, those types of things. We really pushed one another with those conversations. We finished then. I gave them a survey to fill out to respond about how this whole process affected them, not just the process of the conversation group, but the readings before and those how it affected the way that they lived their lives and if it affected anything at all, just to see how that would happen. And so these are some of the learnings that they responded and said that they had learned. Most of all, for the group itself, I think for many of them, this was the first time they looked in depth at any part of Scripture, I think. So for some of them, they were really interested in the cultural differences between our time and Ruth's time. And some of them even said that they were excited to realize that they had been invited into God's story, even though they weren't someone with a great faith, but still had doubt as well. They all agree that the reading of the passages before the worship service were very helpful in preparing for the worship service. And they appreciated hearing the different points of view, the weekly gatherings. Again, I think most times for most of those involved, if they talk about Scripture, it's with their spouse, and this allowed more voices to challenge and to think more deeply about what we were reading. And one person wrote, "I believe this time of conversation, in addition to the sermon, gave a better and complete understanding of Ruth and what God is calling the church to be in the world." Responses like that that make you smile. My personal analysis of the project, I already mentioned the group dynamics and the way the failures that I experienced with inviting the experts to come and share with us. Other than that, the group itself was really interesting. I appreciated we had a wide variety of voices in the group, which worked out really well and allowed us to have good conversation, and there was some real sharing, and that was encouraging. For me personally, also, this project, this is going to sound bad, so please don't take this the wrong way, but this project forced me to prepare more deeply for the sermon. It's not like I wake up Sunday morning and flip open the Bible and say, "I'm preaching on this." That's what Steve taught me in Preaching Institute. Yeah, just kidding. I'm just kidding. But this project, by even me doing the readings in the way that they had been designed, was challenging for me and was an encouragement to me to be able to do that. I also was reminded that it's really important in my congregation to do object lessons. Sometimes I forget that not everybody has the same experience and education that I do, and so it's important to be able to do those things. And at Mount Tabor, they are more than willing to do those things as long as they don't have to volunteer for it. As long as somebody else volunteers for it, it'll go great. So I pick volunteers. But in doing those, that was really an important, and most people who weren't even involved in the conversations but were involved in other ways mentioned just how meaningful that simple object lesson was to understand more deeply. So that was valuable for me. I also appreciated the participation and the groups that we had. Where we go from here? is a good question. I'm continuing the readings for the pre-sermon readings for each week, and that's open to the entire congregation to take with them and to read and prepare for the sermons each Sunday. And so that's available. As far as this project goes, we're starting a new series this week, and in the next few weeks, we're going to be talking more about, I'm calling it holiness, but some issues of that can be controversial or can really challenge us. So I'm opening up, we're going to have times for questions over the next few Sundays for people if there are questions. And the way we're going to offer questions right after the sermon, an opportunity for questions right after the sermon. But for those who are like me and probably wouldn't speak in large groups like that, I'm the pastor, though, so I have to. But we're going to give an opportunity for people to write down their questions, and then we'll discuss them the following week before we get into the next sermon. So I'm trying to find a way to make this continue to work. I love the Sunday school discussion, and that may be something we do once a month or twice a year for a month every year, just to continue with that. This has been an amazing opportunity, and it's been a blessing to be a part of it. I just want to close with a story. I said we went to visit the nursing homes, and we went to visit a widowed woman who is dealing with Alzheimer's. And we went into her room. There were 12 of us. We went into her room, and she looked at us all with a big smile because she was so excited we were coming. And she said, "Well, what are we going to do?" I don't know. We just came to say hi. But we said, "We're going to sing." So we started to sing together, and she began to join in, which was a really powerful experience. I mean, that was my project in a nutshell. A group of people, multi-voice singing and inviting others to join them. And so it's been a blessing and an honor. And thank you again for your time.